I'm John Krall. Today on No Limits, we're going to talk about mass transit. Many community leaders in and around Indianapolis say that mass transit is the future of central Indiana. But plans to build that future have stalled in the Indiana General Assembly in the past due to concerns about cost and the viability of the planned system for all parts of the region. We're going to talk about where mass transit is and where it's going with some great guests. Ron Gifford of IndyConnect, Hamilton County Commissioner Christine Altman, and Westfield Mayor Andy Cook. Please join the conversation by calling 1-866-476-3881, emailing nolimits@wfyi.org, or connecting via Facebook or Twitter at WFYI. Now, this news. Welcome to No Limits. I am John Krall, director of Franklin College's Pulliam School of Journalism, executive editor of thestatehousefile.com, and your host. We are talking today about mass transit. You can join the conversation by calling us at 1-866-476-3881. You can send us an email at nolimits@wfyi.org or send a comment or question via Facebook or Twitter at WFYI. I'm joined by some great guests. Ron Gifford, welcome back to the program. You're with IndyConnect.
John, thank you. Great to be here.
It's good to have you here. Christine Altman, who is a Hamilton County Commissioner. Christine, welcome to the program.
Thank you very much.
Certainly. And we will be joined a little later by Andy Cook, who is the mayor of Westfield. Well, we need to talk a little bit about where this thing is right now. I think that, I know you guys live mass transit, but a lot of people out there do not. So where are we right now in the process? Ron Gifford.
Thanks, John. So where we are at the State House is sponsoring House Bill 1011. So State Representative Jerry Torr, who's from Hamilton County, and he's joined by Representatives Greg Porter and Cherish Pryor from Marion County, and then several other co-authors, have introduced a bill.
So Republican and Democrat.
We have both Republican and Democrat co-authors and sponsors on the bill from both Marion and Hamilton counties, as well as a lot of support from around the state now as the bill's moved forward through the process. So yesterday, Wednesday, February 13th, the bill came out of the House Ways and Means Committee on a 20-2 vote in favor of the bill. This follows the bill coming out of the House Roads and Transportation Committee a couple of weeks ago on an 11-1 vote, which means that we now go to the House floor next week. As early as Monday, the bill could be eligible for amendments and then final passage later in the week.
So it looks like it's on track in the House. Now, we should point out that, and I'm going to stick with you for a second, Ron Gifford, should point out that similar measures have been before the Indiana General Assembly in the past. What happened at those times?
Well, last year, in the short session, we tried to move the same legislation through the process, and it got held up in the House Ways and Means Committee. We didn't get out of that committee last time. It got caught up in some of the politics of some of the issues that were going on at that time, including the right to work legislation that had been debated during that last session. So the bill didn't move forward last session. We actually learned a lot about that and got a lot of good feedback, and frankly, we've spent the last year building a really extensive grassroots coalition here in central Indiana and then actually around the state of people who are interested both in mass transit options in central Indiana and then others like the mayors from around the state who are interested in having these kinds of tools maybe available to them to address their own local needs, local issues down the road.
And could we talk about what the nature of the tool that you're asking for?
Yeah, absolutely. In some ways, it's a fairly simple bill, although it's a very complicated process and in some ways a more complicated plan.
Yeah, no.
So the bill asks the General Assembly simply to give us permission to do a few things at the local level. The first is to allow us to use some existing local income tax authority under what's called the Economic Development Income Tax to allow us to use that in a more flexible way in order to provide a dedicated funding source to build out a more robust transit system. Now, this is a technique that's been given to 15 other counties around the state over time to fund particular local projects. So we're just asking for that same flexibility that these other counties have been given. Secondly, we think it's an important enough question that it really should be decided by the voters. So the second part of the bill is to create the opportunity to have a public referendum mm-hmm. where the voters of Marion, Hamilton County, or other counties around us, at their choice, at their option, could put the question on the ballot and have the voters decide whether they want to make this investment or not. And then finally, because we're talking about a new regional entity, the creation of a somewhat new regional transit authority, that's a little different than what exists today. We think the governance structure from that, since it's going to be a multi-county entity, we think the governance structure should be set out in the law so everybody knows exactly what they're getting into and what the rights and responsibilities would be. So those are the three things we're asking the General Assembly to do. We're not asking the General Assembly to pay for it. Mm-hmm. We're not asking them to weigh in on the merits of whether a particular route or a transit corridor should go here or there. We're not asking them to weigh in on the merits of that.
Well, and I will ask, since Christine Altman is here from Hamilton County, what is the case? Why does this make sense for Hamilton County? And then we'll dive down into what the plan is, what routes we're talking about, and all of that.
Hamilton County was was the first metropolitan county, surrounding county, to join what's known as CERTA, which is the Central Indiana Regional Transportation Authority. And I've had the pleasure of serving as its president probably for the last 7 to 8 years. We joined primarily due to the fact that we view transit as a necessary element to make our community stronger and to connect to all the surrounding communities. We can't be siloed in terms of transportation. And it's important to Hamilton County, and I would suggest all the surrounding counties in central Indiana, that the core of Indianapolis remains strong. So we want to assure connectivity and to make sure we can build out our infrastructure in all surrounding counties logically and sustainably.
We are talking about mass transit here on No Limits. You can join the conversation by calling us at 1-866-476-3881. You can send an email to nolimits@wfyi.org, or you can send a comment or question via Facebook or Twitter at WFYI. We've gotten a couple of email questions, one from a listener named Anne Marie, who says, I note that you have on your show the suburban reps and IndyConnect rep. Where is the representation from Indianapolis? The neighborhood people we had on an earlier show, the same ones talking about needing one less car because there's bus service, so you then can afford a house. Please do not allow the misrepresentation of this proposal to continue. This proposal is serving only the suburbs. I'm going to say, note before I toss the question out there, that this is not the first show we've done on mass transit. We have had representatives from a variety of viewpoints on it. We also had the mayor on talking about this morning, who's reasonably Indianapolis-centered. But that said, let's address Anne Marie's main point here, is that this proposal only serves the suburbs. Ron Gifford.
Well, Anne Marie, let me first let you know I'm a Marion County resident. I've lived in Indianapolis for a long time, so we don't just have suburban voices here. And as John just pointed out, Mayor Ballard has been one of the most vocal proponents for a more robust mass transit plan in Indianapolis and in the region. And let me assure you, there are 155 organizations that have signed petitions of support or resolutions of support for this plan, including most of the neighborhood groups in Indianapolis, businesses located here and the like. So this is a plan that has very broad support. And if you go to, you can go to a couple of different websites to learn more about the specifics of this. Mm-hmm. You can go to IndyConnect.org. Mm-hmm. which is the website that is run by the public sector, the planners, the Metropolitan Planning Organization, Indigo, and CERTA comprise that, the public planning piece. So if you go to IndyConnect.org, you can find a lot of details about the specifics of the plan, but let me give it to you in summary form.
Mm-hmm.
The first thing the plan does is it doubles the amount of local bus service in Marion County. So the very first foundational element of this plan is to dramatically improve the current Indigo bus service in terms of increasing the frequency, adding a few routes, but really adding frequency to the existing routes to make the system more accessible for people, to allow folks to get from point A to point B when they want to, as opposed to on a 30 or 60 minute wait, which is the case now. It adds local bus service into Hamilton County, which doesn't exist today, and it creates cross-county service. The first phase of the plan really talks about being in Marion and Hamilton counties only. That's not to exclude the other counties who would have the ability to opt in when they want to. Our conversations have suggested that the other counties will probably wait a little bit before they would come into the first phase. So we start by dramatically improving the local bus service in Marion County and in Hamilton County. Then the next thing we do is we create 5 rapid transit corridors throughout the region, all of which run through Marion County, all of which will have multiple stops in Marion County, but also into Hamilton County, obviously, because the goal is to create connectivity between those areas in the region that are either economic centers where people work, healthcare facilities, educational facilities, entertainment spots, being able to go to the ball game, or being able to go up to the Palladium, or get out to Conner Prairie, or take advantage of any of the other cultural or entertainment options we have here. So if you go to the website, interconnect.org, you'll see the map, you'll see where the routes are, and that should address any concern anybody has about whether this is only a suburban plan or not. It is very much a regional plan, but it has very extensive service in the urban core.
John, welcome to the program.
Hi, John.
Hi. Your question, please.
Well, I had some concerns. First of all, I was very concerned that we're being asked to vote on a proposal for a tax, and we're not really getting to see any full-blown plan. It's just kind of like, oh, give us some money and let us go do something, and then we'll come and we'll decide what we need kind of thing. I live up here in Zionsville. I'd love to see a full-blown system for Indianapolis with routes that go up through Noblesville, Lebanon, down to Greenwood, and so on and so forth. But there are a couple of concerns beyond just the money aspect. I think we need to examine the fact that Indianapolis itself is only approximately, and the surrounding areas are only a little over 1 million people. Mm. And the use of a large train system becomes cost ineffective when we are using large trains or large buses. I think we need to really look at setting up something that doesn't rely on old technology. Light rail is probably the absolute worst choice, since you're occupying surface streets, surface locations, along with pedestrians as well as cars and trucks. I'd like to see us do something else. There are some really innovative monorail systems out there that do not have a straddle-type system like the one Indianapolis already built. That really would be more cost-effective. I can't recall the name of the particular company, but theirs was a really interesting design. It uses a single rail system, and the cars hang off the opposite sides of the single rail. So you have one set of rails that allow bi-directional functionality. And getting away from these large trains, I think we really need to look at something innovative like autonomous cars circulating on the net that could very easily follow 465, 70, so on and so forth. And you bring those in. When you're at the kiosk, you swipe the card, you tell it where you want to go, the system knows what kiosk you're at, it diverts a car off the rail, it stops at your location. You could have major shopping malls as a stopping place, Park 100, so on and so forth, and then tell it where you want to go. It would be able to tell you the next car will arrive for 2 minutes and 46 seconds. It will make one stop at Keystone at the Crossings. It will deliver you to Castleton
okay.
at certain time.
John, let me jump in for a second here because I want to get it. These are very good questions and points, and I want to give Ron and Christine a chance to get to them. Thank you very much for the call.
Thank you.
Ron, I'll throw this one to you first.
Well, John, thanks for the call. The first thing I would suggest, please go to the website and take a look at the plan, because I can assure you this is not a situation where we are asking for the public to vote on something that they won't know anything about. And we're certainly not asking people to give us some money so we can go do something. There has been years of planning that have gone into this process so far, and a very comprehensive proposal has been put forward. When the proposal was first released back in 2010, the IndyConnect, when it first became known as IndyConnect, the planning community, the public planners, took that plan out to over 150 public meetings and hearings to get feedback and input back into that, which then was used to revise the plan. What you're going to see is a very comprehensive plan in terms of the types of technologies that would be used, whether it's local buses, whether it's the creation of these rapid transit corridors. You're going to see that in perspective of the maps, potential route locations where stations would be. And within the next week or so, we'll also have up on the website very detailed spreadsheets, cost models, cash flow models, and things of that nature.
And I know you're going to have a series of public hearings, meetings, too, in the next month or so.
That's right.
We are talking about mass transit here on No Limits. You can join the conversation by calling us at 1-866-476-3881. My guests are, for the moment, Ron Gifford with Indy Connect, Christine Altman, who is a Hamilton County Commissioner, will be joined soon by Westfield Mayor Andy Cook. I'm John Kroll. You're listening to No Limits. Please stay with us. Welcome back to No Limits. I'm John Kroll, director of Franklin College's Pulliam School of Journalism, executive editor of thestatehousefile.com, and your host. We are talking today about mass transit. My guests are Ron Gifford with Indy Connect and Christine Altman, who is a Hamilton County Commissioner. We'll be joined here in a little while by Andy Cook, who is the mayor of Westfield. And we were talking right before the break. We got a call from a listener named John, who expressed some concerns about the plan and the vote. And I mentioned very briefly that there is there will be public hearings on this. Could you talk a little bit about that and tell people where they might be able to find the schedule, Ron Gifford?
Sure. So one thing that's happening right now is the planning process for this proposed system is ongoing. And public hearings are being held in the next couple of months. Looking at
like 8 or 10 of them, aren't there?
Multiple yeah. public hearings all over the region. Again, IndyConnect.org would be the best site to go to find out the schedule for these public hearings. And these are looking specifically at three of the proposed rapid transit corridors. Let me tell you what I mean by rapid transit corridors. A lot of people may not understand mm-hmm. that terminology. Part of what we're trying to do here is come up with the most cost-effective plan possible. How do you maximize the level of service, the amount of service, but do it at the most cost-effective price point, if you will? And there is a new emerging technology. It's used pretty widely in Europe and now in some parts of South America and only in the States more recently, called rapid transit, where you use vehicles that are, for all practical purposes, replicate light rail vehicles, except they're buses. They operate autonomously. Well, you have a driver, but I mean, they're not on a fixed rail.
That's reassuring.
Exactly.
Thank you.
I think we're a long way away from the driverless vehicles situation here.
But what's important is it looks and feels like light rail. It just doesn't have the fixed guideway in terms of the rail system. But as we build out the system as anticipated, it would have stations, it would have the elevated boarding, and it would feel very much like a light rail vehicle with significantly less investment.
It's a fraction of the cost to do that. Now, the question is, where are the best places to put those? Mm-hmm. Now, the proposal is to put one of those corridors, what we call the Blue Line, in the Washington Street corridor, and it's pretty obvious that Washington Street is going to be most of that.
Mm-hmm.
Another corridor that's being looked at is what is now referred to as the Green Line, and this is the one that most people have heard about. This is the old abandoned rail corridor that goes from downtown Indianapolis up to Noblesville. It's where the State Fair train runs mm-hmm. today. So it's an existing rail corridor, and what's being looked at right now is whether or not that should remain a rail corridor in this plan, mm-hmm. that is to become a light rail line, or whether some of these other technologies might be better suited for that. These other kinds of vehicles or the like. So a series of public hearings and meetings have already been held, but will continue to be held about that. And then finally, the Red Line is the corridor that would go from Carmel through downtown Indy down to Greenwood. And the route there is not nearly as obvious where exactly which streets we should be looking at. And you don't want to make those kinds of decisions without a lot of public input from the neighborhoods that these corridors would go through, and you want to make sure you're connecting the schools and employment centers and things like that. So not only will there be these public hearings in connection with these corridors, but let me just note the timeline if we actually move forward with this overall proposal. If this bill moves through the General Assembly by the end of April, and that's the timeline we'd have to pass, the public referendum could not occur before November of 2014. So we'll have an 18-month conversation in the community before the public referendum as to whether this makes sense or not. And one of the requirements of the legislation...
And presumably, if they vote no and they decide it doesn't make sense, that's it.
Then that's it for a while, at least. But the legislation actually requires that the proposals, the plans, be publicly posted, that there be public hearings. So I'm confident that there will be a substantial amount of conversation about this before any vote.
Well, and the other thing I would caution, when you go to the website and you see a map with lines on it, these are proposals.
Yeah.
And it's based upon your input as a community where these lines should go. And so this is what the planners feel would be the most conducive routes at this point. But that's why we go through public hearings, to get comments and concerns from neighborhoods, ideas as to where a better place to connect or a better circulator should be. That's why we really encourage people to become involved in this process, so we come up with the best project we can.
We are talking about mass transit here on No Limits, and my guests are Ron Gifford of IndyConnect and Christine Altman, who is a Hamilton County Commissioner, was just talking. You can join the conversation by calling us at 1-866-476-3881. You can send an email to nolimits@wfyi.org or a comment or question via Facebook or Twitter at WFYI. Ian, welcome to the program.
Hi, thanks a lot.
Certainly. Your question, please.
First, I'd like to say thanks to everybody involved for all the work that's been done on this issue so far. My question is, how do you boost ridership and encourage people who have relied so long on their cars to utilize the mass transit system of this kind?
Thank you very much for the question, Ian.
Thank you.
I think a big part of ridership is improving service. Right now, Indigo, I think, is managed as best as it can. I can only compliment what management has done with Indigo and the drivers and everyone involved. But until we fund transit appropriately, we cannot get the routes in place that are necessary for good connectivity, and we can't get what's called headways in place that will encourage people to ride transit as choice ridership versus you have to ride it because you don't have a choice. And I think that's the success of this plan, is we have planned significant investment and sufficient investment to draw that type of ridership and support all the people that need to get to jobs because they choose not to have a car, or they cannot drive, or they would prefer to have someone else handle the traffic.
And I asked Ron Gifford earlier, to make the case, in effect, for why this is important for Indianapolis, because we've got an email question. Christine, I don't want to give short shrift and ignore, what is the other side of the coin for Ann Marie. Why is this important to Hamilton County? How crucial is it to the county's development?
Well, I'd just point out to Ann Marie that the train goes both ways and the buses, go both ways. I feel like I'm giving the rebuttal to the State of the Union right now.
Marco Rubio.
You can't see this on radio, but that was a little Marco Rubio.
To give you an idea, Hamilton County currently only has on-demand transit, which means you would call our provider, which is Janus Development, who handles our system. You schedule a ride, and you get to the doctor or to work or wherever you need to go. Right now, I averaged out what we currently spend in our county option income tax that's allocated to the county. And before the recession, where we've had to cut back, we averaged investment in infrastructure, roads, bridges, et cetera, over 40% of our county option income tax. That's your local tax dollar now. Right now, we don't have the ability long-term to sustain that infrastructure and grow it with traditional investment only in automobiles. It just is physically, I think, impossible to account for the growth that we will have without an alternate form of transportation, transit that's sustainable. Otherwise, I look at taking your front yard, or I look at taking grandma's porch, or I take your farm to expand our existing road-based system. And when you look at when we expand, it is purely for rush hour traffic. You look at the roads, we hear the complaint that no one is on the bus, no one rides this. Look at the time that you're observing that phenomena. Look at the roads at the same time you're observing the phenomena, and it's the same thing. Our roads are congested during rush hour, and that's what a robust system would take away.
So it's a quality of life
issue. It is genuinely a quality of life. You look at what our children want. We continue to build for what we perceive is appropriate without opening our eyes, but my son, who's 25, does not want to drive everywhere, wants to have the option of having a robust transit situation and a walkable community. And we continue to plan in the direction we're comfortable with. We will lose that creative talent to other places that figure out what their residents want to see.
We are talking about mass transit here on No Limits. You can join the conversation by calling us at 1-866-476-3881. Herman, welcome to the program.
Hello.
You're calling from Ripley County, I see.
Yes, Ripley County.
Good.
America doesn't have a love affair with the car. We have a love affair with point-to-point transportation on demand. If public transit is dense enough and frequent enough, you achieve point-to-point transportation on demand. And, you know, that is shown in large metropolitan areas in North America, Toronto, New York City. If we move in that direction, as this proposal is implemented, we will have that. Regarding rail, buses first. Buses are much less expensive. The right-of-ways that would eventually be used for rail can be one- and two-lane busways initially. Build the ridership and then convert to rail when you have the ridership to do it. And my stump speech here, I'm stranded out in Ripley County. We've got a good local on-demand transit system, like was it Janus, but it doesn't connect. I'm stranded. When I get older, I want to be able to get to Indianapolis. I want to be able to get to the airport. Right now, I can't do that.
Thank you very much for the call, Herman. Well, I should welcome right now to the program Westfield Mayor Andy Cook, who has just joined us. Good to have you here.
Thank you.
In some ways, what Herman's talking about really is establishing we are at the edge kind of a revolution in the whole idea of the way we move people around urban areas. Christine Alton?
I'm sorry. I'm smiling because this is a new phenomena that that we're looking at. It's that we're transit week. If you look at Indianapolis 50 years ago, we had a robust transit system. Pictures that at the turn of the century, there's a huge hub where transit came into downtown Indianapolis. That's how people moved not so long ago. The phenomena is we shifted our investment in infrastructure from transit and roads to purely roads.
Mm-hmm.
And that's I look at it just almost in amazement of what we've given up, and now whatever's old is new again.
Mm-hmm. Ron Gifford, you were...
Well, it's a little bit of Back to the Future. That's absolutely right.
Mm-hmm.
But what you're seeing in communities like ours, places like Charlotte, Salt Lake City, Minneapolis, what you've seen, very successful implementations of better and more robust transit systems there, because the residents of those communities have realized the benefits and why it's important to provide multiple ways of getting around. No one is suggesting that we should all get rid of our cars.
No.
Anyone who thinks that this transit proposal, even as robust as it is, means everyone in Indianapolis and in central Indiana can abandon their cars, they're not paying attention. This isn't about forcing people out of cars. This is about giving people options to get to places they need to go. And Herman's point about point-to-point transportation, That somebody asked me once, well, what's the definition of a good transit system? It's a system that gets you where you want to go when you want to get there.
Mm-hmm.
It's really that simple, although it apparently is incredibly complicated to get that done.
Yeah, well, and not cost-free, which is the other issue. That's you know, one of the arguments I think that we've seen from Andrea, my former colleague, friend, Andrea Neal from Indiana Policy Review, has raised the argument that it's just not a cost-effective way to deal with Indianapolis's transportation challenges or central Indiana. Says that you are all well-meaning folks. She uses that phrase over and over again, but that it you know, that the price tag is just too large. I know I'm going to pull Westfield Mayor Andy Cook into this conversation, because as an elected official, I'm sure you don't love to tell people, oh yeah, we're going to spend your money or anything.
They
like
don't
that.
Like
but
to.
That,
they, that doesn't the go over real well for yeah. us to just yeah throw that money out there. So.
So what is the argument then for, because we're, how big a price tag are we talking on all of this, Ron Gifford?
In the first phase, over 10 years, we'll spend about $1.3 billion to build out this system. We anticipate about half of that coming from federal grants. So the first benefit we receive is we bring about $700 million of federal money into the region to support construction and related jobs. And then we spend about $70 million a year over 10 years in local match to build out this system. When you look at highway projects in the region, mm-hmm. I'll just give you one example. Up in Hamilton County, the rebuild of US 31 is about a $500 million project. The rebuild of the interchange out at 465 and I-70 by the airport mm-hmm. was about a $500 to $600 million project. So transportation infrastructure is costly. And so a lot of times people get hung up in that price tag over 10 years, $1.3 billion, and they say, oh, my goodness, you're well-intentioned, you're well-meaning, but it's outrageous. But the reality is, compared to other transportation infrastructure and compared to how much we would have to spend just in one corridor, if you wanted to look at how you're going to move more people on the I-69 corridor, when you talk about how much it would cost to build all of the lane miles and all of the additional lanes you would need on I-69 to accommodate the level of passenger traffic that we could accommodate in the Green Line, you know, you would be talking about huge amounts of money to go solely on a road basis.
Well, and I will throw that to Westfield Mayor.
And that's the way we're used to looking at spending our transportation dollars here in Indiana. Let's make it wider. Let's make it faster. And I think that the most efficient way to spend a transportation dollar is going to be through a very unique blend of surface transportation in mass transportation. I hate to sometimes use the word mass because it sounds like New Jersey and New York, and that's so anti-Hoosier. But we can build systems that will complement each other, and I think we can create a very unique environment compared to the rest of the country, really, where we're not totally reliant on transit. We're not totally reliant on our highways. And you brought up the cost factor. You know, right now we pay 18 cents per gallon in federal highway tax. Part of that goes towards mass transit somewhere in the country, and we are not tapping much of that in a return to Indiana as we could.
So we're leaving money on the table.
We are leaving money on the table. And, you know, we talk about, well, we're spending all this money on, mass transit will never be self-sufficient. Well, you know, if you ever looked at the profit and loss statement for 465, you'll see it doesn't produce any kind of profit. Matter of fact, it doesn't even have a revenue stream. It has no income.
And I don't think people understand how many local dollars are currently being invested in the surface transportation. They view everything being built and maintained by your federal gas tax, and that simply is not the case. Cities and towns have issued multiple bond issues just to try to keep up with growth and maintenance on their system.
Well, and some of this also, and we're coming up on a break, so it's very quick, but we also are struggling with a change in the funding system for a lot of these things, because as people drive more fuel-efficient vehicles, the revenues from the gas tax have begun dropping. We are talking about mass transit here on No Limits. You can join the conversation by calling us at 1-866-476-3881. My guests are Ron Gifford with IndyConnect, Hamilton County Commissioner Christine Altman, Andy Cook, who's the mayor of Westfield. I'm John Kroll. You're listening to No Limits. Please stay with us. Welcome back to No Limits. I'm John Kroll, director of Franklin College's Pulliam School of Journalism, executive editor of thestatehousefile.com, and your host. We are talking today about mass transit. You can join the conversation by calling us at 1-866-476-3881. You can send an email to nolimits@wfyi.org or fire off a comment or question via Facebook or Twitter at WFYI. I am joined by Ron Gifford of IndyConnect, Christine Altman, who is a Hamilton County Commissioner, and Westfield Mayor Andy Cook. We've gotten a Facebook comment more than question, although there's an implied question here from Robert, who is a listener, says the problem with putting in monorail is, simply put, Indiana is cheap. We miss the window of putting in a Seattle-like system for a good 60s price. But the people that say we're not a big enough city are in the chicken or egg loop. Without good transit, we stay in that loop, ready for a death spiral. I remember crossing the county by Washington Street in 1978. Dead shops all the way and into both counties. Christine Altman, you're nodding your head in affirmation there.
Well, let's talk about the cost if we don't start investing in transit. And part of that cost is... I envision our region as growing in the continual large lots, planners being very concerned about allowing density in certain corridors because of the traffic congestion, et cetera. And when we talk about costs of the system, we also need to look at the cost if we don't. We will continue to have to run sewer lines and water lines and roads and plow the snow for a sprawling infrastructure that becomes more and more difficult to maintain. We lose productive farmland with that type. It's called smart growth is the coined term, but it's really transit-oriented development that occurs along guideways that we establish with a sense of permanency. And we've taken several folks, and I would encourage listeners to, when they travel, look at what those corridors look like in Cleveland, look at Charlotte, Houston's developing it, where you're allowed, or it just makes sense to put high density along those lines because the folks will ride the transit system as a primary source in rush hours, and it does not cause the congestion.
Christine, you're absolutely right, because it's very easy for we Hoosiers to sprawl. We are not confined by mountains, by water, rivers, so to speak. So, yes, it's very expensive to expand infrastructure, and by a transit systems, we can actually help control the kind of growth that we should be promoting.
We're talking about mass transit here on No Limits. You can join the conversation by calling us at 1-866-476-3881. Stan, welcome to the program.
Thank you.
Certainly. A question, please.
Yeah, I have a question and a comment. Question, what is the real, let's be honest with ourselves, what is the real holdup to getting this done? Is it economic or political? Because I look at a system like Chicago, which is what I'm most used to. It's a wonderful system. You can get anywhere, anytime, relatively inexpensively and get around. And if you want to go to a game and have a beer or two, you don't have to worry about driving home. That just makes sense to me. So what is the real holdup here?
Well, I'll throw that one. Thank you very much for the call and the question, Stan. I'll throw that one to the elected official first, Mayor Andy Cook. I guess we have two elected officials
here, and then
Ron Gifford as well.
So how did I get chosen? I could lead it off.
Well, you put your name on the ballot. Yeah,
it is political, and it's simply our legislator looking at being held liable, if you will, for what is viewed as a tax increase for something that do we really need? And What we're actually asking our legislators to do is to allow we local governments in central Indiana, and we'd like to have Marion County and the surrounding eight counties, we would like for the legislature to allow us to ask our people if they would be willing to pay a new fee for a new service. And that really is the debate that's going on right now. But in reality, I mean, what elected official wants to be held responsible for a tax increase? And that's what we have to get through.
Yes, Christine Altman.
Well, and I can only speak for Hamilton County and the communities within Hamilton County, but I would submit that a lot of our success as a county has been that our residents, our people, are willing to invest in things they find important. And I think it has paid us vast dividends in terms of our ability as a community to provide services, etc. We invest in schools, we invest in public safety, and I feel comfortable that if we ask people, do you want to invest in transit, they'll either tell me yes or no, or they'll have another priority. But services are not free. We all have to pay taxes, and the question is, for services you expect government to provide. And the referendum is, I think, a very fair way to approach this, is saying, we think this is a good idea. Are you as a community willing to invest in this infrastructure and opportunity?
And Ron Gifford, we talked actually before we went on the air about the prospects in front in the Indiana General Assembly. We mentioned earlier on the show that it's moved out of the House Ways and Means and likely is going to go to the floor of the House of Representatives next week. Mm-hmm. What are the prospects in the Senate?
Well, first we have to get through the House.
I get it.
So,
yeah. But a 20-2 vote means you start with 20 votes of the 50 you need.
So I'd say we're optimistic about the bill moving through the House. And what we've discovered in talking with legislators is I think the same thing we'll discover as we talk more broadly with the residents of central Indiana, and that is as they understand more about the plan and the proposal and the benefits and the thought process that's gone into it and the careful and conservative planning and the financial modeling and the like, they have a much higher comfort level, if you will, with something that today, you know, if you look around Indianapolis today at our transit system, there's not a lot there when you just look at Indigo. And so a lot of people don't have that personal experience with a good transit system. And there is a natural question or even skepticism of, well, we don't have it. We've done okay. Didn't we just host a Super Bowl? And why do we need it? And so part of it's the education process. Mm-hmm. So, like I said, we've had a good experience with the House and working and talking with individual members. And we'll just have to double that effort in a way when we get over on the Senate side and start anew with the Senate, working with individual senators. Now, on that side, there are individual senators who are already championing this issue and are supportive, and we'll work with them and their colleagues. Ultimately, at the end of the day, I think this is going to pass, and I think it's going to pass because there's been such a groundswell of public support for this, and I think it's something when people really seriously look at it, they realize if we don't do this, we will fall farther and farther behind other communities with whom we compete for jobs, economic development, and business.
We've gotten a question from a listener. Mike from Noblesville says, what about allowing bikes and handicapped access in light rail proposals? Is that part of the proposal, Ron Gifford?
Well, all of these vehicles we're talking about, these new modern rapid transit vehicles, all operate so that when they pull up to these permanent stations, they have what's called level boarding. That is, you just go right off of the station platform right into the vehicle. So absolutely accessible for persons in wheelchairs or if you're pushing a stroller, if you're sort of at the other end of that spectrum, or bicyclists. A lot of these vehicles have bike racks or standing area where you just roll right in and are able to bring your bike on and then get off and continue your journey.
We are talking about mass transit here on No Limits. You can join the conversation by sending us an email at nolimits@wfyi.org. Mary, welcome to the program.
Oh, thank you very much. I'm
certainly
sitting here. I'm from Hamilton County, and I'm looking at the new 31 corridor. And I want to say that I support the transportation
project that we're talking about. And I remember the bus starting at Sheridan, going through Westfield and Carmel and taking us downtown to shop. And I heard the wonderful stories from my elders about the old interurban. And I was wondering if we could use any of the old interurban track. But here's my main issue. I think it's fair that everyone helped pay for this, not only the people who file income taxes. I believe we should take maybe 1% out of our sales tax from the counties involved and use that to help pay for this transportation. Your thoughts?
Thank you very much for the question, Mary. Well, I'm seeing cheers, actually, from Christine Altman here, so I'll throw that one to her first.
Well, sales tax traditionally has been reserved for state purposes in Indiana. A small fraction of that will go to support what's PMTF, which is a transit sliver of that. And our original proposals did look at sales tax because you are correct, Mary, everyone participates in that in some manner or another. But the state's very concerned about our existing rate of sales tax and also the complications of trying to collect it locally by jurisdiction and that complication.
We are starting to get close on time, so I'm going to tick through some of these listener questions, try to get the calls in as quickly as possible, and if we could answer quickly, that would be great. We've gotten a question, an email question from a listener named Neil, who says, the prior public hearings referred to by your guests were laughable. At each of the three public hearings I attended, opposition to repurposing the Monon rail line, the Green Corridor, stood near 100%. The planners nodded politely and went ahead with their proposal submission without a hint of change or modification. Convince me that this new round of public hearings will be more than bread and circus. I'll throw that one to Ron Gifford.
First of all, the Monon corridor has never been part of the conversation. So if somebody thinks that the proposal is to turn the Monon Trail into a transit corridor, that's just incorrect. That is not part of the conversation. The Green Line that's being discussed is an abandoned rail corridor that today, at least from the state fairgrounds up to Noblesville, has train tracks that are operated by the State Fair Train, amongst others.
And then we've gotten an email question from a listener named Michael who says, what is the economic impact of similar cities that went for no mass transit and modern rail? I mean, what does it cost them? Andy Cook?
Cost them. I can see that we visited, for example, Charlotte last summer, North Carolina, to look at their system. The economic, very evident, the economic development that occurred along that Charlotte line from downtown and for several miles out was just absolutely remarkable. So, yes, it does produce economic development.
Have there been studies of the places that passed, or is that Ron Gifford, or is that like trying to prove a negative?
Meaning looking at the benefits that have accrued in those communities?
No,
where
I think Michael's question, as I understand
it, is
what's the cost if you don't do it?
Here's the cost if you don't do it. You will no longer attract young professionals into your community who are the lifeblood of your economic development strategy. So if you don't do this, those young professionals coming out who are the workforce that we need to keep our high-tech industries alive and well and growing here, those folks are going to go to Minneapolis or to Charlotte or to Denver or to Salt Lake City or to places like that because they want to live in communities where this option exists. So the cost to us is going to be in the inability to attract and retain those young professionals. And the other cost is that people who live here today who need good transportation options in order to get to work, to get to the doctor and the like, they won't be able to do that. And so we will incur a societal cost that's really borne out in the individual costs that those people suffer.
Less than 12% of the jobs in our regional area are accessible by transit. That should scare a lot of people that want everyone, you know, every one of our folks to be productive. We're 73rd in the nation in terms of job connectivity with transit.
Angela, welcome to the program.
Hi, I was just wanting to make the comment that I think it would be good if we had safe car parks. For instance, when we went to New York, we were in New Jersey. They had a car park you could go to. You could, you know, park your car, take the train on into town, and come back, and it was safe. if you can picture one person trying to cross U.S. 31 South there at Southern Plaza, you would be taking your life in your hands because, you know, it stops one, the buses stop. Well, they go to town on the east side of the street. They come back home on the west side. And trying to cross it, like I said, you take your life in your hands. So I just hope in the planning stage that that is taken into consideration and you will have much better ridership if you do.
Great. Thank you very much for the call, Angela. And I assume, can we reassure Angela that we are thinking about where we park cars when people access these?
Not only park and rides and the ability to safely park your car, but to Angela's point, absolutely ensuring that pedestrian safety is number one so that you can easily get to and from the transit stops.
Well, pedestrian connectivity.
Mm-hmm. We are talking about mass transit here on No Limits, and we've gotten an email question from, or no, I'm sorry, a Facebook question from John Green. I think it may be the author who has been a guest on this show. Has anyone looked at using the underground rail lines that were built and abandoned? I know some of the tunnels are still intact and could be used. I'm seeing puzzled looks here.
Well, as Westfield was founded by the Quaker organizations and was a huge part of the Underground Railroad, mm-hmm. I haven't found any of those around our city. There are great urban myths that most all of the homes mm-hmm. along Union Street are connected by tunnels and secret passages. So far, we have not unearthed those.
And then we've gotten another Facebook question from a listener named John, who says he hasn't heard the whole show, but what I have heard has had no discussion of the global climate change aspect of public transit. The bus system you have been talking about is not the same as a train in terms of emissions, is it? Wouldn't the Longview take this into account too? Ron Gifford.
So these rapid transit vehicles all will run on alternative propulsion systems, meaning they will either be hybrid electric, they'll be electric, or they'll run on compressed natural gas. So, and the new buses that'll get purchased for local bus service, Indigo today, all of their new buses are hybrid electrics with Cummins engines, Allison powertrains. So that will be an important contribution from the transit system's perspective, at least in terms of addressing some of the global, some of the climate change matters.
And then I'm going to toss one very quick question, and I think this probably would go to Ron Gifford because we are running out of time. From Andy, a listener says, how can citizens across the state aid the Indiana Transit efforts at the State House or elsewhere? Give them a URL, give them a phone number, give them something.
Best thing to do is contact your state legislator and and ask them to support this. Go to IndyConnectNow.com. That's a different URL than I gave you before. IndyConnectNow.com. is the advocacy website. You can go there and you can find how to directly link to your legislator and put your voice into the mix.
And talk to your neighbors.
Thank you very much. This has been a fascinating show, fast-paced. I really appreciate Ron Gifford. Thank you for joining us. Christine Altman, thank you. Westfield Mayor Andy Cook, really enjoyed talking with you, and I'm sure we will have you back because I don't think this subject is going to go away. We're going to be talking about it for a while. We will be back next week. I am John Kroll. You have been listening to No Limits. Thank you for joining us.
No Limits is a production of 90.1 WFYI Public Radio, Indianapolis. Producer, Sharon Alseth. Interactive Media Coordinator, Melissa Davis. Technical Producer, Jeanette Rhodes. And Board Engineer, Don Hibschweiler. We invite you to join us each week for No Limits, made available through IPBS, Indiana's public broadcasting stations.